URL is mecgroups.com/MEC_research_log. And we will ask you to refresh that page a few times throughout the conference. I see that quite a few more people are joining us, so maybe it's not a bad thing that we had a slight hitch there. My email address, once again, is editor@marketingexperiments.com, and I'll be monitoring that account throughout the conference.
Okay. We ready to begin, Brian?
I'm ready if you are.
Okay. Our topic is A-B split testing, and we're going to focus on how to use A-B split testing to increase conversion rates and challenge assumptions and solve problems. We're going to be looking at several tests themselves and studying the data from the experiments. Also, stay tuned because we'll be giving you a testing tool that we've developed, which is an A-B test protocol that helps you organize and plan an A-B test. And in addition to that, we will be giving you some examples that you'll be able to view in terms of how we've set up an A-B split test. With that in mind, most of us are familiar with the concept of using A-B split testing to determine which elements on a page are helping the performance of a web page and which are not. For instance, one might typically test two different headlines on a landing page to see which one would outperform the other. But there are other things you can do with A-B split testing. Many of us think of it only as the, you know, way to determine whether or not email A or email B is the most effective email to send, or the way to figure out whether landing page A or landing page B is the best one to utilize in your campaign. But you can use A-B split testing to better understand visitor behaviors and priorities when visiting your site. You can also use it to solve specific problems you have with your site pages, to isolate an issue, to use it essentially as a diagnostic tool to find out what is going wrong and how to fix it. You can also use A-B split testing to dramatically challenge assumptions you may have about the best way to design or write a page. Later, we'll be talking about a way to use it that is reminiscent of multivariable testing but doesn't require the math or the expertise. And so to kind of help you understand that, we've looked through several of our own experiments that we're conducting here at the labs. And we want to work on three of those with you this afternoon, study the results, see what we learned, and see what we've learned about conducting these A-B tests in general. Test one was testing the impact of current events on email response rates. We're going to talk about that test. We set up a simple test with two emails, both of which were written to drive click-throughs to a site and convert leads into sales. Here's kind of the key variables or the key factors. In email A, we wrote the sales text within the context of an emotionally charged news story that was making headlines at the time. In email B, we wrote the email without specific mention of the event, but still alluding to the recent events in the news. Now, this was done with a story that was emotional and that involved a tragedy, and so there was concern on the part of the team as to whether or not it would be appropriate to reference the story directly, because no one wanted it to feel like the emotional drama connected to the offer was simply a tool being used to manipulate people's emotions or their feelings. So the essential difference between the two emails is that one mentioned the event by name and the other did not. Now, we tested the messaging in more than 3,337, 466 email addresses. We compiled the results after 12 days. And essentially, this is what we discovered. If you'll look in your notes, Brian's refreshing a copy of a new chart into your notes, and in that you should be able to see the table itself. So, Brian, those have been added now, and if you look, you'll see the number of emails sent to email group A and email group B, the number of click-throughs, the click-through rate, the actual sales, and the conversion numbers. From that, I think you probably need to understand that specifically email A, which mentioned the news story and the events surrounding it, significantly outperformed email B. So the click-through increased by 16.5%, and overall conversion, this is critical, email to sell increased by 43.4%. So the email that disclosed the specifics of this news piece generated 53 more orders, with an increase of 43.4% than the email that only alluded to the events surrounding the story without mentioning specifics. Now, there are points I won't go into, finer points about the size of the interval and the meaningful impact of statistics, but in general, what we discovered here was more than which email to send. And this is critical because A/B split testing is not simply a way to get better results with your specific campaign. It is a way for you to glean information, to educate your team, and to discover insights about your audience that you cannot discover any other way. It is shocking to me when I speak or lecture or conference with some of the largest companies in the world and their marketing teams and discover how much speculation goes into their marketing efforts. A/B split testing is a way to cut through the speculation. And let me tell you something. It's true in major media, not just online. So much of what is done when a company, for instance, plans a television commercial is speculative. It's shocking how much money is at risk based on the guesswork of a few key team members. So there's an example of what we do with emails, but we're going to look at another case, and this is testing a specific problem. In our second test, we believe that customers visiting our test site with an 800 by 600 or a 1024 by 768 resolution monitor were not finding the relevant sales language for the primary site product unless they scrolled down the page. So we set up an ABC split test for this hypothesis. A was the original page. B featured slightly shortened data and used a click here anchor text to take visitors down the page. This page showed more of the order process on a 10 by 24 or 1024 by 768 resolution monitor and on an 800 by 600. And it displayed the offer copy for the primary product. Page C was a radical redesign in which the order process was partially viewable on 800 by 600 and higher. Now, I understand if you're listening on the call, it's hard to imagine what I just described. But we actually have screenshots of these pages, and most of you have already seen them if you've received the email. Correct me if I'm wrong, Brian, but we've provided all three of these pages in the prior link where it says take the survey in your notes. Is that correct?
That is correct.
So you've seen the pages, and if you have not, you may see them by clicking on the link take the survey. If you have not taken that survey, it's in your notes right now, please do so, because in about two or three moments, we're going to flash the results up here and see how well this audience, and there's a lot of people on the line here, and there's a lot of major marketing groups on the line right now. So let's see which one our collective intuition selects as being the best. I want to point out that while you're questioning that and while you're completing the survey, I don't even know your results right now. I'm going to see them in real time just as you are, and I'm going to ask Brian, I think I'm going to go ahead and release you to forward the results of the survey, and let's see how this audience voted regarding these pages.
Okay.
Let me know when that's been refreshed or it's in our notes.
Actually, it should be there now.
Okay, good. I'm refreshing my page, and this is what we see. We have about 500 people.
Not real fancy, but...
It's not fancy, but it's clear, yes. We have about 500 people registered for our conference right now. Not all of them will be on the line, but of those who voted, these are the precise votes out of a total of 117 votes, page A, page B, and page C. Now, if I could, for the sake of learning, let's go back, and if you'll click on the Take the Survey link, let's look at the pages, and let's see who voted for what, and then we'll share with you what A/B testing or ABC split testing revealed for us. So I'm looking at page A. And then I'm scrolling down now looking at page B. I note some differences in page B, primarily being in what is above the fold. And then I look at page C, which was designed by one of the best optimizers on our staff, whose name shall remain anonymous. And what he's done is he's brought more of the information up into the fold. And from the voting thus far, and you could continue to vote. We may get an update on this later, but in just a moment it'll all be it won't be germane anymore, because I'm going to tell you what the numbers really revealed. If you'll look, almost, and I'm going to estimate this because I'm running the little algorithm in the back of my mind here, it apparently currently about 15% of our audience chose A, it seems. And it would look to be about 5% or something of that nature in the 50 percentile range chose C. So A was the lowest performing page by our vote, and C was the highest performing page by our vote. So now you're probably wondering how these all performed.
Well, just to interrupt you, if everyone will refresh their page, they'll actually see the percentage of people who voted for each one now.
Okay, so the actual percentage is now in our notes.
And then they'll also see the results.
Okay, yes, 15, 53, there we go. All right, with that in mind, you'll also see beneath it which page really performed well and which did not. So scroll down slightly in your notes if necessary, and you'll see the chart. Page A was the primary control. Page B performed 15.57% better. Page C performed 53%, not better, but negative 53.28%. Now, if you catch what that, the point of the chart, page B outperformed the original page by about 15.5%, and page C was a dismal failure. If you're wondering what went wrong with page C, I want you to know, and I can't hear you. I'm at a disadvantage speaking to a large group that I can't get feedback from, but we have actually got everyone's name that's registered, and we think it's our duty to send those of you that voted improperly, we think it's our duty to send your names back to the company, to your CEO, and just let him know that you failed in this critical marketing test. If you feel bad, please don't, because many of our own we're constantly failing over here as we discover through testing what works and what doesn't. Now, I don't want to get trapped in discussing why page C failed, but I'm going to go ahead and give you something to think about. I'd like to move on to more critical information here as we continue to learn about testing itself. But may I just tell you as a researcher what we have determined and what we're probably going to be issuing another journal issue, another brief report on this topic. While page C was the most attractive and communicated the information, it was presented in a lateral process. Your iPath had to start. The first thing you encountered was a request for your credit card information, and then you had to zig your eyes down to the far right corner of the page to discover why you were asked that, and then back up to catch the information and over left in order to get the complete the information required of you. I believe that one of the most critical factors in conversion is sequencing of flow. And it's my contention that the reason a letter format is so effective sometimes in sales process is not just the tone, but it's because of the linear, vertical, sequential way the information is communicated. And in the other versions, the information comes to you in the right order. Many, many big companies have a modern design look where the information is communicated in blocks parallel to each other on the center column of their site or their page. It's been my experience over and over again with testing, we can outproduce those types of pages with a vertical approach. Now, I want to have Brian take it off lecture notes before I move on. Do we have any questions? Does anyone want to ask a question? Anyone have questions before I move on and look at a third test and continue to discuss A-B split testing? I just want to help you briefly if I can for a moment.
Glenn, does the number of fields matter on the forms? Is that something that we can take account for?
See, it's... the golden rule here is the least amount of action steps required in order to achieve your objective equals the greatest conversion ratio. So in general, the answer is yes, it has major impact. And we just took a 12-step order process for a major publisher and reduced it to, it was 12 pages. And we reduced it to essentially a page and a half and probably 5 to 6 fields total.
So
we captured all that information afterwards.
If the key here is a vertical scroll with information above the fold that's producing, you know, that link to move down the page, what did you find it was the most important ingredient that needed to be above the fold to promote the vertical movement?
Can I'm going to answer that. And in the, and can I do this? When you, if you ask a question, just let us know your first name so I know how to...
Ike.
Mike? Okay.
Ike. Ike, like Eisenhower.
Excellent. Okay. Ike, the... It depends on the nature of the offer, but in most cases, what needs to be above the fold needs to directly connect with what they anticipate based on what they clicked on the page prior. So you need to draw them in with a connecting headline. It, if it's the offer page, it's good to establish relationship and then strike with benefits that are relative to them prior to asking for the initial action step. What we see as an example of that in this case is in the page prior, they entered a zip code and they wanted to see a map of the offenders in their area. By presenting that map first and then enhancing it with a further offer and then requesting their information, the sequence was psychologically pleasing. But in paragraph C, they're being struck first of all with, you know, a request for something that looks like, you know, you're trying to sell me or get something from me, and the reaction is a psychological interrupt, which often mitigates a high conversion level.
Thank you.
This is Marie. I have a question.
Yes, Marie.
Yes, I'm wondering how this compares with a free trial sort of offer. A lot of companies that are large and doing good conversions do use the more modern format that you suggest. But the reassurances are on the left, and the information boxes or the registration boxes tend to be on the right. And
yes,
so,
and I want to suggest that, of course, we've done enormous amount of testing in free, with free trial offers with major publishers, New York Times, Reuters, and others. And, you know, the way we learn all of this is we get real-life research partners as opposed to some, you know, lab experiment where it's not clinical and where it's too clinical and it's not relevant. And we run all kinds of tests with them, and then what they get is growth, and of course, I guess, but what we get is data that helps us understand the insights that we're after. And what I've discovered is that the linear approach is very effective in those cases. In many cases, I've went in and substituted what they've had with almost a letter approach and seen conversion lift sometimes with double. Pardon? And so in doing that, what I have discovered is, and what we've discovered collectively as a team, is it's all right to have information on the left that is not primary information, but is support information, like an indicator of credibility from the Better Business Bureau or BizRate's 5-star rating or a testimonial. But the meat needs to be in the center, and it needs to flow vertically in most cases. Now, everything I'm saying is a generalization. That's why we A-B split test. You may be the exception to the rule. But in most cases, that's the way it is. So hopefully that will help you. I'm going to take more questions, and you can ask about this issue again as we move a little bit later in through the conference. I'm going to continue to go forward, though, in the interest of serving our topic. And if, Maria, I did not answer your question fully, then feel free to contact us back or even email us. Anyone can email us that has a question about this, about our research. I think you can email Brian. Who should they email?
They can go ahead and email me at editor@marketingexperiments.com.
Okay. Any questions that I don't get to, feel free to email him, and we'll do our best to help. But we are going to take some more questions in a few minutes. For now, let's go on to test three. Test three was challenging assumptions by testing the obvious and learning from the results. And in this test, we created two versions of a simple sales page. Each page was approximately 2 screens in length, and asked the reader to complete a short form in order to receive a free DVD. In version A, we added some personal elements to the page, including a photo of the writer, a personal introduction, and a signature. There's that letter approach. In other words, we created a personal sales letter on the web. In version B, sales copy was largely the same, but without the personal elements. No photo, no salutation, no signature, an actual digital signature. You know, when I say digital, I don't mean a number. I mean it looks like a handwritten signature. Which version won? In this case, conventional wisdom suggested that the personal version would be the winner. Here are the results of our testing. Personalized version did 34.6%. Version B, the institutional, did 39.9%. What you need to understand is version B outperformed version A by 15.3%, meaning the page that did not have the personal information. Now, if you wonder why is that, and that's what A/B split testing does for us. It allows us to continue to test till we get the answer. I can tell you what we perceive to be the answer right now. The problem was not the letter. The problem was not the tone. The problem was not the signature. The problem was the photo. And I don't want to get into this now because, again, I want to move forward, but most of us make a mistake by putting a photograph of a person near our order unless it's just the right, precisely the right person targeted based on our audience. Because in general, faces get a reaction, either positive or negative. And you're going to lose those that give you a negative reaction. So there are 2 points mainly to consider here, and that is, first, if we had never tested these pages, we would have left money on the table by assuming the personal version would do better. And number two, we have to be aware that this was one test alone. What if we had taken the personal version and doubled the length of the copy as well, adding more of an individual sales pitch? What if we'd changed the photo or repositioned on the page? And, we have to test all of that. And then there's a second assumption, and that is that a single test sometimes will tell us all we need to know. Some of us think an A-B split test is write email A, email B, send into a sampling, and on we go. But really what you're trying to do is learn with your A-B split testing about your audience or about your customers or about your prospective customers, and you're trying to kind of codify this learning, and A-B split testing allows you to do that. So here are some things to understand that will help you that we've learned from this. It is very simple to conduct an A-B split test, even if you don't have the internal resources to conduct them. There are outside services you can turn to, and we've given you a list here. Let me see some of the ones that we've talked about here that will help you. Mind you, each of these have certain limitations. In the lab, there's a lot of things that we do that you can't do with a solution that comes right out of the box. But here are some companies that conduct A-B split testing. And if you're questioning which one of these companies might help you best, or you have information, or you want a third party who's completely, we don't accept advertising and so on, email us and we'll tell you. It depends on what you're looking for. And we have relationships with some of these. We are not affiliates of anybody listed here. We get no revenue whether you go with them or not. So if you're just looking for some help, send us a note. Not to mention the fact that in our own lab we do some things, and there may be things we can help you with. Going on, if you look at this, even if you can't set up a true A-B split test where perhaps you want to do this but you don't have the capacity on your servers, there's another way to do it. And it's very easy to create a sequential A-B split test, and here's a key point. Sometimes you can do a sequential test. And that's when you show one version of a page for a certain period, like a day or a week, and then you show another version for the following similar period. The results may be a little less reliable or a lot less reliable, depending on some factors. If on Monday you run page A as your home page and you switch it out, and on Tuesday you show page B, and on Tuesday there's a national disaster, it might be that your results are skewed from page B. Or it might be that if Monday's a higher day for you than Tuesday, traditionally when you run them on Monday, you might get your results skewed by Tuesday, simply being a lower day anyway, or a holiday, or whatever the case. But please understand something. Despite its limitations, I have for years to use sequential testing with lots of projects where it wasn't practical to get the A-B split test unit up in time and gathered enough information in order to develop a probability that one page was better than another, and I could always run it again if I wasn't sure. I tell you that to try and help some of you who feel helpless when it comes to actually pulling off an A-B split test because you don't have the programming and you don't know how to judge a vendor or you don't have the budgets to do it. If you don't understand about sequential testing, again, shoot us a note. We'll help you if we can. Mind you, we're just a bunch of researchers here. We have limited time, but we'll do what we can. I just feel like a lot of us get confused, and we think testing, especially if you're academic. In my case, you know, a lot of my colleagues think of testing as the end, but it's not. It's the means. And all you're after is probability. And if I make 10 suggestions for you that will optimize your site, I wouldn't expect you to test every one of them. Some we just know are best practices, and you ought to do them. But there are 3 to 4 that might be really critical, and you just don't know the answer. And you need a quick, efficient way to find it out and eliminate speculation. And so testing can help you in that way. And it also, number 3, gives you the opportunity to maximize conversion rates, solve problems, and challenge assumptions. And keep in mind that you have opportunities beyond testing small changes to a page. You can also challenge an existing page by designing and writing an utterly different version where almost everything is different. Now, this is what you normally don't hear this, and you normally don't think of this when you think about A-B split testing. So let me challenge that assumption. You're absolutely right that when you move more than one variable, you can't be sure which variable is the reason for the difference in your results. But sometimes what we need to do is, first of all, establish the ballpark that we're going to test in. And one of the ways to use A-B split testing is to completely radically rock the boat by designing a page that looks nothing like the page whatsoever. Internally, sometimes we hold a competition and we'll have 3 different people design a page, and all of them, without seeing the other one's page, will do their very best to, you know, write the page that's going to produce the most. We do this with our research partners, and it helps us make sure that we're getting, you know, the best thinking we possibly can. It goes back to, you know, the medieval academic method of presenting alternatives and arguing them to their conclusion. In our case, what I have found is that sometimes we can get lost being afraid to move one item only in an A-B split test when we ought to test the whole concept. Now, once we get what I call a control page, then it's time to drill down. And I'm going to talk to you. We're going to give you a protocol for testing before this is done. But I just want to point out at this stage in the game that think of it differently. In some sense, it's like multivariate testing. Now, I'm aware that that's a primitive example of multivariate testing, but the bottom line is that you can sometimes test a much bigger change. Number 4, testing provides web groups with an invaluable means to demonstrate to group heads and management that the hard figures behind any suggested changes or improvements. I worked with a huge company in the UK that designed page 1, you know, their homepage. They spent a year redesigning their homepage. That tells you right there something's wrong, by the way. They finally got it redesigned, multiple usability tests, lots of committees. Somebody said a camel is a horse put together by a committee, by the way. And essentially, they built a camel. We came along with a testing mechanism and for testing some other areas in their company, and when word got out that we offered to put the new page up on an A-B split test against the old page, great havoc was created within the company's internal structure because politically they could not afford the risk of actually testing the new home page against the old page because the head of that whole process confessed to me quite candidly, you know, off the record, that they were afraid that the new page that they just spent a year on would not perform as well as the old page. And I actually think their fears were quite grounded. So the point I would make is that if you get a good A-B split testing tool, you can cut through a lot of political problems, and you can just say, this is what we found out, and this is why we think we should spend money here, because it's producing these kinds of results. It's really useful in that sense also. With some of our research partners, we've created a whole platform, like on our own servers, to test their pages without waiting on their development team and all of that goes with that, so that you can actually, you know, you can get the numbers kind of in a skunkworks and then use them in strategic ways beyond just testing a page. You can use it when you're thinking through something. Like, we often test product names on our own servers, or we'll test their landing page on our servers, and that way it doesn't require their development resources. Number five, a use of consistent testing will increase the knowledge base of your web group or company significantly. I can't stress this enough. If you do A-B split tests, journal all your results. We do that in a series of test protocols. Journal your results, and you will build a notebook of insights about your customers or the consumers who are B2B, prospects that will be so useful in planning future campaigns. It's amazing how often we force ourselves to learn the same lesson over and over again. Save yourself the grief and the money. Keep good records, and think about A-B split testing not just as a way to figure out which email to send or which landing page, but use it as a way to educate the smartest people, the most talented people in your company, and use it to increase their capacity. Number six, establish a testing protocol, a way you do this for your websites and emails, and make it a regular part of your company's culture. And we've proposed one that we use internally here. We really don't have a lot of secrets. The website, you can get access to all of our information. There's no cost for it. This conference you're attending without cost, and we're going to give you the protocol that we use internally when we're setting up a test, and we hope that that will help you also. And I'd like to kind of walk through sequentially here how you set up a test, but I am going to open the line for a moment to see if you have questions about what I've said so far, and then we're going to kind of look at a step-by-step way you do it and then get a tool in your hand. So if I could, take it off lecture mode. Now, when Brian takes it off lecture mode, would you be sensitive to any background noise on your phone so that the other people online can hear also?
Do I
have any questions?
Yeah, this is John. I have a question,
John.
About how many do you have to send out or get back in order to be reasonably statistically reliable?
That varies on the situation, and there are formulas for that, although in some cases, even if you're not an academic, a certain level of common sense can tell you. The thing that I have noticed, John, is that the interval of your test, how long you test, is directly relevant to how much traffic you have. How much traffic you need is relevant to, the variable itself that you're testing or its impact overall on your numbers. Now, I'm going to talk in a reasonable scenario. And the reason that it's difficult to say is because it's not just how many you send, but your response rate itself is a critical number. If I sent out 100,000 emails and I got a total of 33 responses, and I got 20 from one, and I got, the balance from the other email, I wouldn't feel like, no matter how big the sampling was, I wouldn't feel like the responses were large enough. By the same token, if the difference, the gap between A and B, itself is an indicator as if I've tested long enough. There is one thing I'd warn you about, though. I don't understand this, and I wish that I could give you a scientific reason. But many, many times when I start A-B split testing, the initial results can be very, very, very different than how it all, the results you get back from the first sampling starts to sit promising, and you already start predicting what the victory is. And often a few days later or a few thousand responses later, you discover that your prediction was way off. So don't jump the gun. I've dealt with a lot of times I've dealt with research partners who get preliminary information, and because it's so important for them to make as much money as they can right now, they want to shift way too soon. Get a decent interval, and then you get real test data, and you're making your decisions based on something helpful. John, because that is not an exact answer, if you have a specific test that you're looking at, and I can find a resource, a little bit of time, send over an email to us, and we'll look at what you're trying to do, and we'll make a suggestion for you on an interval.
Fair enough.
Okay, good.
Yes, this is Ed.
Yes, Ed.
I was wondering, one of the differences I saw, or some of the differences I saw in the letters, were the location of the testimonials. And I'd like maybe to ask how much importance did those possibly play, or in general, how important are they, the location of them?
We call a testimonial, it's a very good question, we call a testimonial credibility indicator, and it's one of many types. A rating is also a credibility indicator. But whatever the credibility indicator, an award is another. Whichever the indicator, here's what we've discovered. It's important where you put it, and it's important which category of testimonial, for instance, that you use. And let me give you an example. We call these places on your site where there's a risk for the prospect a leverage point. For instance, you ask him for your email address, or you ask him to make a purchase. In his mind, when you ask him that, he has a fear. You want to get your testimonial right next, real close to where you're asking, real close to where he's encountering that emotional response. And then, instead of just putting a testimonial up, you want to match the nature of the testimonial to the fear that you're addressing at that moment in his mind. Don't just put a testimonial up about how great you are next to an issue where he might be concerned about refunds or returns. Put a customer service-related testimonial there.
Okay.
And if he's worried, if it's about email address and you've got a report and he's trying to weigh, is it worth the risk of giving you my email address for this white paper, then get a testimonial right near there about how this white paper improved their business performance by 28%. When testimonials come in, don't just put them in a big file. Categorize them based on the concerns that you cite, that your audience typically has, and get those categories and testimonials ready and display them in proximity, very close to the actual place on your site where the risk is being encountered. Does it make sense, Ed?
Very much so. Thank you.
All right. I'm going to move on. I'm going to take questions again in a few more minutes. I'm going to move kind of rapidly now, and I'm going to describe exactly how to conduct this test. I'm going to take you through 9 steps, and then if you're having troubles keeping up or you're concerned, hey, I'm not understanding everything, please bear in mind that we're going to be mailing out a full briefing to everyone who's a subscriber to the, you know, that's signed up on our site, and so you'll get this. And along with this, you'll get the literature review with a bunch of other articles that may help you, and you know, we rate those and other sources. So with that happening, if I could, I'm going to dwell on these 9 steps now. So we'll go back to lecture mode and go forward. Number 1, develop your capabilities. Now that means determine if you're going to use a vendor or if you're going to build something on your own server, which is not that hard, by the way, or if you're going to have to do sequential testing. But figure out how you're going to do it. So get your capabilities in place. Number 2, identify your established control page. Your control page will be the page which you're testing all subsequent optimization efforts against. If you're just getting started, your control page will be the one you currently have. When a new page performs significantly better than the existing page, it becomes the new control page. This is classic direct response, but some of you may not know it, so I just want to point it out. Number 3, establish your testing goals and perimeters. What are you trying to accomplish with your A-B split testing? Are you after more subscribers, a higher conversion rate, a greater return on investment? Your goal will determine your testing perimeters, and which in the end will determine what your metrics are that you're going to actually, you know, measure. Number 4, determine your sufficient test interval. That's back to a question, I think it was John that raised it. That will bring us back to the question of how long do I need to test, or how many emails do I need to send, or how many visits to my site do I need before I have enough information? And you can make a good judgment call on that, and then you can see based on the gap in the results or any issues that you might have once you execute what that interval may be. Number 5, consider creating 1 to 3 completely radical redesigns as opposed to isolate. And this is in your preliminary. You may be past this in your testing, but in some cases, completely redesign. I'll give you an example. Recently, they brought us a beautiful HTML-based email, and their goal was to this was a site company, I can't tell you their name, but their goal was to you know, improve it. And so they asked us to put up another version of their site, and we suggested, another version of the email. Instead, we suggested a plain text version. Well, they had all kinds of reasons why they didn't do plain text, but we said, look, let's just test it. And then if the HTML outperforms it, we'll give you 2 more variables for the HTML. Well, we prepared variables for the HTML anyway, but the plain text outperformed the HTML version so significantly that they changed their whole marketing approach. Incidentally, if you think you can't do plain text, even if you do HTML, consider light HTML. Heavy HTML in an email is interpreted as an ad, and often your response is really significantly reduced. I'll tell you something else, and we're getting ready to release a report on this. Ugly pages often outperform beautiful pages, much to the chagrin of designers and even many people on our own staff. Sometimes those ugly pages produce the most revenue. Not a beauty contest. It's about ROI. So don't be surprised when you start A-B split testing that you discover that that beautiful design doesn't work. Let's go on. Select the right tools. There are tools you can use for interpreting your data. Mostly you won't need that. A simple spreadsheet will do it. You'll only need that when you start moving into more sophisticated testing like multivariate. Number seven, that was number six. Evaluate the redesigns and the A-B split tests. Test the alternative landing pages against the control page. And then once you've done that, based on your results, determine what your new control page is going to be. The radical redesign method will likely generate a quantum leap and improve conversion rate rather than optimizing something and getting a mediocre jump. Once you've identified the best general approach, you've either confirmed that your current approach is the best or you found something really different and it's made a jump for you. Now you're ready to optimize individual elements on the page. And this includes headlines, call to action, page copy, graphics, and even color. Color has a lot of impact. It would also include navigation links, sequencing of the information, as we discussed, and tone. We talked about copy, but the tone in the copy, iPath in general through the copy, things like this that can make a significant difference. So that's kind of the protocol. And then if you look, and I think we're going to go in just a moment here, I'm going to take a few more questions. But let's do one more thing. Let's pull up the test protocol document. Brian, has that been dropped in their notes yet?
Yes. If you go past the list of software and services, the first URL, URL number one, is a link to a Word document. That's a MEC A-B testing template.
So if you take this A-B testing template and open that up right now, you're going to see that what we've done is we've tried to help organize your next A-B split test. And to do that, we've actually filled out. We've given you the items are in gray that are more or less the headers. And then what we've done is we've made an example. And I'd like to walk through it. Are we getting it? Is everyone kind of getting that open? Brian, take it off lecture mode. Is everyone kind of opening up the Word document? Are we having problems? I just want to confirm that it's working for you.
Yes.
No problems.
Okay,
yes, fine.
Yeah, that's good.
Excellent.
All right, so now. There it is.
Excellent. All right, so the first thing you're going to see is the path overview. And all that is a diagram of what you're testing. And if at the top it says registration page, A-B test, and on the left is registration form 1A and registration form 2B, You could make any diagram you want in there. It's just a visual diagram of what you're testing. Now, then as you move down, you've got your objective, your preparation time, and your completion time, how long you think it's going to take you to get this whole thing done. Then you have item A, the original registration form. And honestly, item B, I would change this slightly, Brian. Change this for them. What you have in a box in the future, just do this. That's actually the whole test, not just the item A or B. The reason you see multiple items there is because that's if we're running multiple A-B tests, Brian. So there's a slight, what you have in box, the bottom box, item B. Item A, you know, that item is the whole test. You can just take those boxes out, just sample page 1 and 2. Here we go. If you look in the gray, here's the metric. What are the metrics we're going to use? Then what is the measurement system? It's in-house tracking? Is it web trends? Is it an A-B tool that you've third-party sourced? But what is it? There's your preparation time comes next. Your test period comes next. Then comes your baseline metric. What is it? What was it already? what are we converting at today? If we're converting at, based on the last month, we're converting at 2.1%. That's what you're looking at here. Now, as you move through, there's your testing period, and then comes the actual results. Here's the stats. Here's what happened. Here's what Form A did. Here's what Form B did. And then underneath this is, because I have these tasks, and you may want to move this up, but generally when I'm planning a test, under task, I list all the things I need to do to get the test ready. That's the next thing, key task.
Dad here?
And I bring, generally I don't have the stats yet. You know, those are things
I'm not sure what she's supposed to eat.
We've got someone having a conversation, and we're hearing you. If you could just mute that, please. *6 will mute your line if you've got noise. So I list my task, then I come back and enter the data that we learned, and then I do something else. And it's not here, it's not filled out, but do you see where it says summary conclusions? That's where I list all the things I'm learning. Like it seems like, for instance, I might write in there, it seems like when we set data side by side in a decision process, it interferes with the IPATH, and that a sequential order might be more effective. I might make a note like that, and then I'd say, this needs to be retested. Consider trying it with X. And I kind of begin to write my insights in there. I almost journal what I'm thinking. And for every test, I have a set of sheets like this. And eventually, you fill a notebook up. And eventually, that notebook can be, honest to goodness, that notebook can be worth millions of dollars to some companies. Because it shows you what to do and what not to do, and more importantly, it uncovers it. I'm trained as a philosopher. I do all of this work, but a lot of my academic research is in philosophy and, believe it or not, theology and some other stuff. And it's not enough for me to get data. I want to get to the philosophy underneath the data. I want to understand the principles. I want to peel back the layers. And that's what I use here in these notes as I start to try and learn. Now, I would skip where it says item B, optimized registration form. Just pull that out. You don't even need it. Just delete it from your copy if you're going to save this page. The rest of this is pretty much the same. The reason it's not perfect is because we adapt this all the time, and we change and update and modify it and so on. We'll change it slightly again before we release the journal with the issue itself. All right. Now that I've thoroughly confused you, I'd like a couple of things. One, I'd like to get some feedback and find out if this conference is useful and helpful for you, because in some sense for us, every conference is a test, and we're trying to learn and understand. So if this is helpful, please let me know, and then also fire away with your questions. We've got a few more minutes, and we'll do our very best to answer a few questions if you have them.
I have a question.
Yes.
My name is Rod, by the way. Is there a certain quantity that you normally test, like a minimum and a maximum? I see that you tested 5,000 names.
It really, again, depends on the site. It depends on the force associated with the change in the variable. Mm-hmm. And I know I'm not giving you a good answer. So give me a for instance. Give me something from
your own
site and let me tell you what I did.
We're deploying, let's say, 100,000 renewals, a renewal effort to 100,000 subscribers that we have.
Yes, 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 yes. All right, I would probably take 10,000 of that 100,000 and do an A-B split test with 5 and 5 normally.
Okay,
and
you do 5 with
that,
the control and 5 with the test, correct?
Yes, that's typically what I would do in a scenario like that, and then I'd take my best result and apply it against the other 90, unless I got such a convoluted bad result that I had to do 5 more. You see what I'm saying? That leaves me a little more room to work.
Okay.
Particularly with emails. Sometimes with emails you need a larger sampling because you're so many times you just don't get a lot of responses sometimes. You know, it depends on your click through rate.
Mm-hmm.
If you got a really high click through rate, you might be able to reduce that.
Okay. Thank you.
And if you design this test, Rod, and you want somebody to take a look at it from our end, I'll send it over to us at editor, and Brian will get it to one of our analysts and we'll look at it for you.
Sure. Okay. Thank you, Doctor.
Okay. Someone else,
I have
another
question.
This is Paul, and I have a question. How do you account for the let's say you have a sequence of split tests. How do you account for the influence of each split test in the sequence? For example, you might change split test number one, and it's doing a lot better, but the way you changed it actually has a negative influence on split test B.
Okay. Paul, I'm going to answer your question, but I'm going to restate it because you were really distant. And there's someone else's voice I'm hearing. If you have background noise, just push *6, and then to talk again, you press *6, and you can ask a question. But let me answer Paul. Paul's question is, how do you know that when you have a sequence of tests, that your subsequent tests are not more or less skewing your overall results because the variables are different as you add more tests and things change? Is that pretty much your question, Paul?
Yeah, that's right.
Okay. Well, first of all, I want to point out that you've got to know what it is that your objective is with each A-B split test. And if I'm doing a sequence of tests, one of the things that I do is I map out where I'm going, and I'm careful that the tests that I do complement the earlier test, because you can have this problem. You can get, and this is one of the problems of multivariate testing, and you've really got to be on guard when you do multivariate testing if you don't do it properly, because what happens is they test all these variables at the same time, and then they put them back together and say, well, this is the optimum page. But just because variable A beat variable B in a multivariate test doesn't mean it works as well when you put all the other variables together. And so you can get a result in multivariate testing that doesn't prove true in real life. And we probably have multivariate testing companies on the phone. I'm not taking away from it. I believe in it. It can be done properly. It's just it's a cautionary that I've experienced. And sometimes I use A-B split testing in combination with multivariate. In fact, I'm setting up a whole multivariate system right now with a huge online retailer. They're building their own system. And I'm just kind of overseeing the process to make sure that we protect against that. In this case, I find that if we isolate each test and determine a result, it works well. And then you add the next one and you add the next one, and the danger may be that you have some interrupt. The person that just asked this question, Paul. But what I do then, Paul, is I'll test the whole sequence against the other, like a subscription path A against subscription path B. You can do that and get this. Make sure that now when you add these factors up, that there isn't something that you've messed up.
Okay.
Just be careful that you don't do patchwork across a number of different pages and not see how each page flows from the last page when you're doing multi-pages in sequence. That's a hard question to answer, and that's the best I can do moments. But does it make – am I helping you at all, Paul?
You are, yeah. You look at them individually, but then you look at the path as a whole.
You got it. Yeah, you said it better than me, Paul. You should do my job. Another question.
I have a question.
Mm-hmm.
This is Alex. There's so much talk about Taguchi and multivariable testing these days, and I'm not sure if it's a question or comment. I like your down-to-earth approach. You do it in a very simple way, and
yeah.
I think for most folks out there, A-B split testing, just the way you describe it is what they still don't have. But what's your take on this Taguchi stuff and multivariable testing?
I think it can be valuable when it's done right. I don't think it's the end-all solution that it's sometimes perceived to be, but I don't want to be negative on it either. I want to do this. I want to answer that question, Alex, with a whole journal brief on it, and I probably will have some other multivariate testing groups that will be allow it to provide feedback at the same time, because clearly it can be used to get a result as long as it's kept within certain perimeters. It's also very complicated. You can't do it yourself. You have to have a third party to do multivariate testing. You don't with A-B split testing. Common sense and a little experience can guide most people in A-B split testing. An example would be in direct response, offline, the direct response industry. Most of those guys aren't academics. They're hard-nosed, common-sense guys trying to get a result that learned how to A-B split test by using their brain and running a few of them. Anybody on this phone can A-B split test, but most of us can't do multivariate without some way to crunch all of the numbers afterwards, because you can produce thousands of combinations, and it requires sophisticated mathematics. Now, there are companies that do that, just recently some, and I don't know, Mark, are you on the line from Optimost? Okay. I know that they try to do it, and so there are some that try. We do it, but I'm a big believer in the basics, and I find that with A-B split testing, I can get most everything done I need to get done in terms of figuring out which page to use or which email.
Thank you.
Okay.
My name's Yvonne. I had a question about Test B.
Yes, Yvonne.
I wanted to know if you track how many people clicked on the there's that first line that says, would you like to see names, addresses, and photos, I think it was, with a click here. And I guess you mentioned that that took them further down the page. Did you track how many people actually clicked that link?
Yvonne, I'm certain we have the numbers, but I don't know what they are. And because we track everything. But it's a very good point, because it's one of those ways you gain insights. It's one of the
right.
ways you learn, you know, more about what was happening in the mind of that visitor. So it's a very good point.
Okay. I'll send an email to editor and see if you can send me the response.
Okay.
Okay, thanks.
All right. Very good.
My name's Ryan.
Yes, Ryan.
And I have a question. I'm wondering, what are the most common errors in the analysis of an A-B split test?
Oh, that's very good. Common error number one is probably is testing too many variables at one time. Unless you're doing a radical redesign test, they might change three things, and then when they get a result, they don't know which reason, which one of those things was the result, caused that result. That's one variable, or that's one mistake. I'll tell you, the biggest mistake I see, though, is many people know better than to do that, but they jump the gun. Before they have tested long enough and made sure, they make assumptions and they rush off to make the change. A lot of smaller marketers do that. They because they're used to moving at much higher speed than, say, a big company, and they'll get a result and go, boom. And often it's premature. I'll tell you something, and this is the thing about A-B split testing. You got to know this. It's not like you can tell early on how it's going to turn out sometimes. It radically flip-flops back and forth before you have a large enough sampling to really know. And so those are two of the biggest mistakes that I've seen. And I'll tell you a third one. The third one is not to A-B split test and tell yourself that you don't have the time to do that or you can't afford to do that. That is self-deception, because you can't afford not to do it. It pays for itself so rapidly that there's no reason why a company can't get some type of A-B split test procedure in place. And it is a travesty how many don't. And I don't say that to make anyone feel guilty or to beat you up. It's just that every time I get this in place or I help a research partner with this kind of data, their information, they come back to me like, why didn't we do this before? It changes everything. And so a lot of us are under the mistaken impression that it's really complex, or you have to be, we might not even be personally, I mean, insecurity drives more of our marketing decisions than we know. And a lot of us may just be insecure because we don't know if we can do it right or if we've really got the skill set. You can do this. And it'll make a big difference in your company.
This is Tara, and I have a question.
Yes.
One of the things that I've found in looking at test results is trying to determine statistical significance, and it comes back to that whole analysis question. And as I look at results, I know that depending on how large my sample size is and how much variation there is between the two results, you know, it's very hard to determine sometimes, because the actual difference in the response may seem very small, but with a larger sample size, it can be more statistically significant.
Yes.
So is there some place where I can go for an easy calculator for a simple A-B split test where I can say, you know, this is my sample size, this is my response rate on version A, version B, and how likely is this going to be a, you know, just a random by chance or be determining that confidence level?
We can run, you know, confidence interval testing and different things like that, but you've got to be very careful, because if you do it in a vacuum based on some outside software solution, it's not taking into account the very real variables that are involved in your own business.
Okay.
You know, the best thing I would say to you is let me see an example of what you're talking about, and maybe I'll either recommend a calculator or I'll give you a spreadsheet or give you some advice about how to do it. In our case, I'm very cautious about just a formula that is taken into account apart from the actual business variables. Because honestly, it really does. For instance, I'm less. For instance, email to me, the results in email sometimes require more testing than the results in website.
Okay.
And so I'm cautious with that. And we also do offline direct mail testing, television, you know, stuff. We do a lot of other things, and I've seen it all the way across the industry. And it's a very good point. What's that?
Just in terms of, like, watching the, Sugar Shots campaign that's been going through iMedia. And you know, I'll look at the two results, and I go, wow, those are really close. And then they say, you know, 27% growth. And I'm thinking, well, you know, I know it's a comparative thing. But then I go, well, but the actual response rate was so close. You know, so in terms of deciding where that level of confidence is.
And more than one time, marketers run out and declare victory when they don't really have one yet.
Okay.
But I'll tell you this, it is so easy to – it's not hard to get victory with A/B split testing, because honestly, what you're doing is, you know, you ask the right question. If you ask the right question and test, it generally is going to produce a result that's, you know, valuable to your business, as you've probably already discovered.
Mm-hmm.
And sure has for us. We just did something with a major publisher, and this is honest. This is a real number. It was free trial testing. I could never tell you who it was, but the preliminary 30-day test, I think it was 30 days, yielded a 641% increase in signups. Now that's I know that I you know the what that says how that stretches my credibility to say such a big increase, but that's what it was. And the real number will shake out when we measure retention, but we already know retention is up. But that number is going to be at least half. So wow, you know, sometimes you get that. Now generally a lift is of course much more conservative, but anyway. I'm going to have to draw this to a close. In fact, I'm over time right now, which meant our conference line just doubled in cost. But can you tell me, is this helpful for you? Has this been helpful for you? Because it helps me plan the next one.
Excellent. Yes, very
much. Absolutely.
Very good.
Definitely.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Yes.
I appreciate it. If you have ideas or thoughts or comments, feel free to email us with thoughts about how to do this in a way that continues to help you. There's a lot more issues of the journal that are coming out, you know, the briefings that we think will help you with related issues. But I just want to thank you for your trust, and we're going to keep trying to figure these things out. And we'll talk to you again probably in about 2 weeks on another conference if you decide to part again.